In a moment, we're going to talk about the deaths of Elvis Presley, Princess Diana, and the 32nd President of the United States, FDR. Three amazing works by Steve Eubany, including the books Who Murdered Elvis?, Who Murdered Diana?, Who Murdered FDR?, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Elvis Presley, of course, was born on January 8, 1935. He died August 16, 1977, at the age of 42. He was an American singer and actor. He was dubbed the King of Rock and Roll and was regarded as one of the most significant cultural icons of the 20th century. He energized his songs and people loved him. And then his career grew and grew, and then he was on the Ed Sullivan television program. He just exploded. He was born in Tupelo, Mississippi as well. But what happened to him when he died at that young age of 42 years old? We're going to have three special stories for you tonight. One, as I mentioned, on Elvis Presley, the other on Princess Diana, and the other on Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our 32nd president. Steve Eubany is back with us. He's an American suspense author who reinvestigates the deaths of very famous people using newly discovered facts that debunk historical claims. His books have deduced that some of the history's most famous deaths were actually murders, and we will begin with Elvis Presley. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Look, and I got to tell you, your work and your research is absolutely compelling and superb. It's amazing how you do this.
Well, thanks very much. That's a high compliment coming from someone like yourself. I appreciate that very much. Look, a lot of work. It's a heavy lift.
Oh, my gosh. What we're going to go through Elvis, Princess Diana, and FDR in that order over the next couple hours. We'll take calls in the last hour with you. What was it that you saw in these people that convinced you there's something else other than some kind of accident or a natural death or a death by too many prescriptions? What did you see?
Well, I'm obsessed with history. I think that the very idea that people like me lived centuries ago in a lineage, I think that's just fascinating to me. So ever since I was a little boy, I was interested in history. So I look into these people and numerous others just because it's my passion. You've got to love it, you know. So when I got to these people, there were things I were taught in school that I just never believed. I never believed that FDR died that way. As far as Elvis Presley is concerned, my mother, I grew up spinning the original 45s. My mother was the biggest Elvis Presley fan on planet Earth. So I knew more about Elvis by the time I was 10 or 11 than most people did their entire lives. When I looked into the death of Elvis Presley, I knew it was an Easter Bunny story. I knew there's no way this could have happened the way it happened. So it started out just being casual reading, and once I got to the aha moment, I said, wow, I really have to let everybody know what I came up with here. As far as Elvis Presley, Elvis Presley was allergic to codeine. All right. In 1968, he had some dental work done.
Okay.
And the doctor gave him codeine. And of course, Dr. Nicopoulos always traveled with him. So he had an anaphylactic reaction to codeine. And his throat started to swell closed. And if Dr. Nicopoulos was not on his toes, Elvis would have died of anaphylactic shock in 1968.
Jeez.
So I'm looking at the death, and the first thing investigator Dan Warlick did was dissect Elvis's vocal cords to look for some sort of an allergic reaction, and there was none. So there was no codeine in the body, or his vocal cords would have shown it.
Mm-hmm.
So there were three toxicology reports done on Elvis Presley. The first two showed trace elements of drugs. The third one showed codeine at 11 times the lethal level. So I said to myself, well, wait a minute. If it's not in the body, how can it be in the toxicology report?
Exactly.
So if you go that far, you've got a problem on your hands.
Now, there's no question he was on prescription pills and overdid it a little bit. Would you say he was addicted to these pills?
That's a tough call. I don't think he was addicted. I think he did them because he liked them. I think he just loved them. And
it gave him a high. It put him in a special mode, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. I think that everybody wanted something from him, and it allowed him a chance to escape the world. You know, so, I mean, the stories came out in 1979. ABC's 2020 with Geraldo Rivera reinvestigated his death. And they said, you know, Elvis was on 4,000 drugs, and they showed all these pills and this and that. And, well, prescribed and taking are quite two different things. You know, when you're... Elvis Presley almost went bankrupt in 1976.
Really? All the money the guy made? He went, geez.
Yeah. Well, he had no tax shelters at all. So the only income that he had was from performing these shows at breakneck speed. So I also believe that there was a longstanding blackmail against someone there, and I'll get into that a little later on. But because Elvis almost went bankrupt in 76, his father took over his finances.
Vernon, right.
He's insolvent. So, you know, here we have all of the Memphis Mafia, all of the inside group is taking these prescription pills. So he didn't have to fight with his father. He just said, you know, look, I'll just write the whole prescription under my name. And it was like a candy bowl in the middle of the room. And this one would take 5, and that one would take 10. And if there were a couple left, Elvis would take them.
Where was the Colonel Tom Parker, during all this stuff, Stephen?
Well, Colonel Tom is an interesting figure in history. He wasn't a colonel, and his name wasn't Tom Parker. this guy was really, really a piece of work. He was from the Netherlands. His name was Edrius van Koo. He allegedly murdered a woman.
Oh, my God.
Jumped aboard a ship and came to America and went into the army. And when I say allegedly, we can't actually say that he murdered this woman, but it's awfully suspicious that Andreas van Koo disappeared on that night in history in the Netherlands, and Colonel Tom Parker, you know...
appears in the United States.
...in America.
Yeah.
So he goes into the army, goes AWOL, and... is released from the army with he's a psychopath. That's what he was diagnosed with.
How did he latch on to Elvis Presley? How did that happen?
Well, this guy is a really interesting figure in history. He, through his entire life before he came to America, he was doing carnivals. You know, he started out working with the animals, and he became a carnival barker, and he worked his way up to promoting shows. So, he already had a history of doing acts like, you know, Minnie Pearl and Hank Snow and Roy Acuff.
Okay, all right.
It was a natural progression to work himself up to this rising young star.
And Elvis was really green, too, in his early days, wasn't he? He didn't even know what to wear.
I would say that, yeah, I'd say that's a very accurate statement. He was just about as naive as a kid as he could possibly get. You know, Tupelo, Mississippi is probably not a worldly place in 1935, 36, 38. You know, of course, then they moved to Memphis. But, yeah, he was pretty green.
I saw a clip of him, Steve, on the Ed Sullivan Show, knowing you were going to be on the program. And he was just, you know, talking to the audience, trying to introduce his song. And, I mean, it wasn't the Elvis that I knew from seeing clips in Vegas. This was a young kid who was nervous and, you know, didn't understand where he was headed. It was incredible. I mean, just to look at that clip from the Ed Sullivan Show, now all the kids who were in the audience went crazy with him. But, I mean, he was really green. His clothes looked kind of blah and everything else. And was it Liberace that gave him the idea to dress up so wild?
I don't know if Liberace gave him the idea or if he got the idea himself, but Liberace was the influence on him.
They got along, didn't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely. sure it was hard not to get along with a guy like Elvis Presley.
They were friends. So,
really something else.
So I remember that tragic August 16th day when in 1977, when I heard that he had died, they said they found him in his bathroom, you know, that he was, you know, slumped over his toilet. And, you know, people accepted that as, oh, my God, he took too many pills. He died of a heart attack. And so be it. And then reading your book, I realize there's something else going on here. Even Geraldo Rivera believes that there was a cover-up. But one of the most compelling aspects is the researcher, Jared Parker, back in 2008, he was working on some Elvis stuff. Wasn't he murdered?
He was, and actually the photo's in the back of my book. So, you know, you don't cover things up that don't require to be covered up. And if you're getting documents that are redacted, there's a reason they're redacted. They don't want you to know something. So he was murdered to shut him up.
Was Elvis worth more dead than alive?
Beyond question. And it's still going. The gravy train is still going. And you know, I write these books because there's so little justice in this world. And I like to think that you know, if FDR and Elvis and Diana read my books, I think they'd smile.
They'd say thank you.
Yeah, because the truth, and that's why I write them. You know, I'm compelled to tell the truth, you know. And they have been so maligned in history, it's really disgusting, you know.
The book we're talking about right now with Steve is called Who Murdered Elvis? And I assume these books are available on Amazon, Steve?
Yeah, they are, but you can get them cheaper at my website.
Okay.
Here's the website. It's whomurderedbooks.com, whomurderedbooks.com. You know, it's amazing, George. We're 21 years into the 21st century, and you can still get a Christmas present for around $20.
You can't
Somebody
beat that.
Somebody in your Christmas list is going to love these books.
Absolutely.
So, whomurderedbooks.com. Go grab yourself a copy. To the murder of Elvis Presley and why this happened.
Now, when you say murder, and this is compelling, how do you think they did it to him? Did they inject him? Did they just know what he was doing and they let him do his thing? What happened?
The timing was perfect. He was supposed to fly out and start his first leg of the tour in Portland, Maine. So in the carnival, much like the entertainment industry, they have what's called the 24-hour people. Those are the people who leave 24 hours in advance to set everything up. Elvis was supposed to leave. He's the last one to leave with a couple other people. Graceland was an empty hull of people. They had a couple maids there, a couple guys there, and someone got in, and I believe with help. You know, what they did, well, I don't want to spoil it. They didn't inject him, and it didn't have anything to do with drugs. But I don't want to spoil the book, okay? But
you name names in the book.
I do. I do name names in the book. And it's funny, I thought I was the only one that knew Elvis Presley was murdered. Boy, was I green.
I got to tell you, I was 27 at the time. I didn't think he was murdered. I took the story the way they said it until your book.
They diagnosed him with cardiac arrhythmia, which is really hard to diagnose somebody with an irregular heartbeat when the heartbeat's not beating.
Is it safe to say that whoever played this role in his death was doing it for financial gain?
Oh, beyond question.
Yeah.
Yeah, beyond question. Elvis became, he was having health problems, diabetes. He had a ton of digestive problems, bowel problems. And they said that he died on the toilet. No way. He was never on the toilet when he died. It was discovered at the autopsy that this guy, this is terrible to talk about, this guy, they do this thing at the autopsy called running the gut, where they take out your intestines.
Oh, my God. Horrible, right?
He was jammed with clay-like fecal matter. There's no way this guy was going to have. He hadn't had a bowel movement in weeks.
Unbelievable.
So, and there's a reason for this. Elvis had a twisted colon. It's a birth defect. It's common.
That could kill you.
Well, he had issues his entire life. And I ended up being friends with Dan Warlick, who was the person who investigated Graceland and, also diagnosed or dissected his body. And I met Dan numerous times. I went to see him in Nashville. He ended up being an attorney.
And you're friends with the pathologist, Sarah Wecht, who's one of the best in the country.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Wecht's the best. What a terrific guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Anyway, so, I mean, when you talk to the people who were, and this is what I do. I don't write Easter Bunny stories. I go source direct. I talk to the guy who dissected Elvis Presley's body, and I asked him questions. There's no way this guy was on the toilet. Somebody got him from behind, smashed his face into the carpet, and did him in. That's why they keep saying that, you know, oh, his nose was different in the casket and this and that. Well, let me slam your face into the carpet and see what your nose looks like, you know.
And he probably felt comfortable with whoever was in his house who may have let the other person in?
Well, yes. Elvis Presley was reorganizing his life. He had just cut about 10 people out of his will.
And is it true that Nixon, President Nixon, basically had him doing some undercover work?
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's exactly true. And there was a reason why Elvis got a hold of Nixon to get federal credentials. Two reasons. Colonel Parker was deep in the mob.
Vegas mob.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you don't play Vegas, those venues, unless you had connections. G.I. Blues was funded by Mo Dallas, who was one of the, you know, he was Mr. Vegas.
He was, that's right. He's the one that Casino's based on, isn't he?
I believe
so. One of them, yeah.
The other one was Milton Prell. So, you know, Elvis Presley gets married. It's Frank Sinatra's plane, who, of course, was connected. And that's not a myth. That's a fact. And he got married at Milton Prell's hotel. This guy was he was in a velvet jail. And they started to squeeze him financially. So Elvis wanted to get traction against the mob. So he became a black belt. He surrounded his people with black, you know, all the people who surrounded him were black belts. Elvis would go on stage wearing a pistol on his ankle.
Gee, a real one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because right after Aloha from, he was getting death threats, right after Aloha from Hawaii, four people rushed the stage. He was on stage in Vegas. And, you know, he didn't see it. He was on the other side interacting with the audience. On the left side, they came in on the right side. His security team took out all but one of them. The other one got to Elvis, and Elvis showed him why he was a black belt really fast.
Oh, my gosh. How soon did they start making money after he died?
Instantaneously.
Wow.
It was all set up ahead of time.
It was the plan, to be sure. We're going to take a quick break, Steve. We're going to come back and talk about who murdered Diana. This is a compelling story, and he does name names in his book. And one of them is kind of obvious. We've heard that name mentioned while we've been talking. And they profited on the death of Elvis Presley. And it's a very unbelievably sad story, the way it happened. Steve Eubany is with us, and we'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll be talking with Steve Eubany about his work, Who Murdered FDR? When we come back in just a moment, we'll be talking about who murdered Princess Diana, who murdered Diana. It's an incredible story, too. We'll take calls next hour, by the way, on Coast to Coast AM for you. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Steve Eubany. His books we're talking about, of course. We just talked about Who Murdered Elvis. This segment, we'll talk about Who Murdered Diana. Next hour, Who Murdered FDR? And then we'll take calls as well. Princess Diana, of course, was born July 1st, 1961. She died August 31st, 1997, in a tragic car crash in Paris. She was 36 years old. That was a very sad moment for a lot of people, Stephen.
Yeah, she was fantastic. She was kind of a supermodel combined with Mother Teresa, wasn't she?
Yep, she was. Now, the relationship with Charles was going downhill. They were in the process of a divorce. Everything was a mess. She started dating a guy named Dodi Fayed. And tell us about that event, that night in Paris that led them into the car. Were they, like, trying to get away from the paparazzi or something?
No, what happened was Diana was receiving death threats for a week or two before that. So initially they were supposed to go to a restaurant in Chazbonnet in Paris, and Doty's security team saw some very suspicious people outside. So they went back to the Ritz-Carlton, or the Ritz, where Doty Al-Fayed's father, Mohammed, owned, and they were going to stay there. Well, the people showed up there. So they had to develop a plan to get the princess out of there. So that's what was the catalyst for the whole thing. And, you know, actually in my book, there are pictures of these people, you know, little snapshots of what they saw on video that had them so spooked. So that's why they ended up having to do this fantastic maneuver where the paparazzi was waiting out front at the front doors, and they went to put on a show saying they'll be out in a minute. And they snuck, you know, the princess and three other people out the back.
Was the driver drunk as well?
Not even close. That is, man, no. The toxicology report wasn't even back when the media started running that, just like Elvis Presley. I mean, they weren't even, again, this is media spin, it's intentional, and they had to blame someone, so they blamed the dead guy, just like Oswald.
And you know what also really kind of shocked me? Was the fact that she died in the hospital, so she was alive in that car that was all mangled up, and there were pictures taken of her by photographers of her lying there all mangled up and stuff. Didn't anybody try to help her?
They were prevented from helping her. There was one guy, I can't recall his name, he was trying to open the door to help her, and the people who were securing the scene wouldn't let him. So the pictures that you're seeing out there about her being dead in the car, that's staged. That's phony. There are real pictures of her in the car in my book, and you can clearly see she's upright, she's grimacing, she's talking. She was alive. It took them 2 hours to get her 4 miles to a hospital. She'd have been better off ordering a Domino's pizza, which delivers in 30 minutes, and riding back with a driver. She'd still be alive.
What was it about Diana, Steve, that people who were involved in this apparent murder wanted her dead?
Well, she could get presidents and prime ministers and even dictators to bend to her will. And she was pushing this landmine ban. And next after that, she was going to do a small arms ban. So when you come between the international bankers and their money, not going to end well.
And the arms dealers, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. This was, and they, all the people who were the biggest arms brokers of the day were all spying on her. The United States had over 1,200 pages of transcripts of her phone calls. So everybody was watching her.
Was she that powerful, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Whatever she wanted, she got. She could, it was a double-edged sword. She could influence the media as she wanted, on a whim. That was the good part about her popularity after she reinvented herself from being the divorcee. The bad part about it is it haunted her. And paparazzi was not involved with her death. That's another myth that's out there.
Doty Fayed's father was convinced that somebody killed them.
Beyond question. He spent $13 million out investigating it. He came up with more evidence than the Paget report, I can tell you that. It was really something else. The Paget report was the British document, which it mirrored exactly the Warren Commission report. I won't go into the parallels. I don't have time. But they're incredible, right down to blaming the dead guy. The Paget report was nothing more than the British damage control document to show the people, look, we looked into it. It was 121 months after her death to having this inquest. So the British Coroner's Act in 1988 states, the inquest shall be held as soon as practicable. Well, I don't know what their definition of as soon as practicable is, but I bet you it's sooner than 10 years, 1 month, and 3 days.
Absolutely.
This is just beyond, you know.
Steve, was the royal family shaken up by this death?
Very. Yeah, Very. They and one of the things that is interesting about how I research it is everybody else is in the UK and they look at it through the royal lens. I'm from America,
right.
So I look at it through clear eyes. They were definitely shaken up. They didn't want to revolt. They don't want to lose the monarchy. They didn't know what to do. They had no idea what to do. It was their worst day ever.
What was your aha moment when you started investigating this leading up to writing the book, Who Murdered Diana? What was that? A lot of things were popping?
Absolutely. It was so hard to pick out one thing. The witnesses that were silenced, that went forward to the French police and gave testimony after testimony after testimony, and it was either discarded or lost. There were, when they left out the back of the Ritz, they had to go through two tunnels on the route. And this route was secured for them by intel. Henri Paul, the driver, was working for intel from multiple countries because he worked hotel security there. And he was fingered by a former MI6 agent as being an informant. So he was working for them, trying to save the princess. He wasn't some random nut job.
Mm-hmm.
No. So they go through the first tunnel, and there are witnesses coming forth saying there were motorbikes around this car that had guns. That's why the Mercedes was going at such a high rate of speed.
And driving all over the place to get away from them.
Exactly. So they come into the second tunnel, and they have this white Fiat Uno kind of lingering there at a slow rate of speed. And what he did was he performed a pit maneuver. And if you don't know what a pit maneuver is, it's what they do in NASCAR. The police are now doing it. They get up alongside the car, and they just touch the back quarter panel just to swerve you and spin you out. And that's exactly what the purpose of that Fiat Uno was there. And it doesn't matter who was driving it. Didn't books written, this guy was driving it. I don't care if the Loch Ness Monster was driving it. The fact of the matter is, it was driven, you know.
How soon did she die in the hospital after the accident?
Almost on impact.
Oh, yeah,
she was bleeding out.
She was that mangled up.
So,
And Fayed was in the seat back with her, wasn't he?
Yeah, and there was something very suspicious about this car that I came up with, and somebody else researched this.
You mean the one they were in?
Yeah, this was not their normal car. This was just whatever was left over in the motor pool. So I couldn't figure out, you know, look, if I saw the crash test rating on this car, why is it that this killed them when it passed a crash test rating at higher speeds? Problem was, this car had been, in April of that year, had been stolen and stripped and put back together. And it was missing fuses, relays were missing. There were all kinds of issues with this car. You're going to put the most famous woman in the world in this? Well, no wonder the car just crumpled up and fell apart on impact.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So there's a lot going on here. There's a lot in that book.
Were they
had more time to do it?
in Europe, yeah, we're doing three incredible stories all in one night. Were they, those who were responsible for this, waiting for the right moment? And was this the right moment, or did this happen by chance? What do you think?
Didn't happen by chance at all. On September 19th was the next meeting for the Intercontinental Anti-Landmine Act. I hope I got that right. there was 100 countries on board. September 19th was going to be when they were going to ink it. All right, they were going to sign it. She couldn't make that meeting. So because she died just prior to that, the press never even attended it, and President Clinton actually withdrew from it.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot behind this.
Have you been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for your work?
Then I won't be. I won't be.
Too controversial?
Way too controversial. Way. I had to start my own publishing company because no one's going to publish me on these. You know.
I didn't know that. Yeah, you're right. It is published by you.
Yeah, it's when you tell the truth, it's great to honor the people and tell the truth. But sometimes there's backlash. And I don't mean, you know, the majority of people who read my book, my books, love them. And most people have been fantastic. But every now and then, you'll hear something from someone, you know, that isn't nice. And publishers don't want to deal with that. So I had to self-publish.
By the way, thank you for the very nice note that you included in the
Diana thing. Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for all that you do, George.
Very kind of you, to be sure. And your work, like I said, I'm an old-time news guy, Steve, and these stories are just incredible. And the fact that you've been so perceptive to pick up on these details that I don't know if the media picked up on it and just won't report on it or what, but you have, and you have the guts to point it out to people.
Yeah, I mean, all of these high-profile deaths have things in common. Planted evidence. In Elvis Presley's death, there were planted syringes just to throw people off.
There were no puncture marks in the body, right?
Nope, not one. Sonny Liston was the same way. Sonny Liston was horrified of needles. There were needle marks in his body, but there was no drugs in his system.
Jeez.
JFK, you have the pristine bullet that was found on Conley's stretcher. Marilyn Monroe, the glass was on the wrong side when they broke in. You know, Princess Diana, you have things that are entered to confuse people. This photo of her being pregnant.
Dorothy Kilgallen, another case.
Sure. Oh, and on and on and on. And there's more sanitized death scenes. Elvis Presley, when Dan Warlick went to investigate the death scene, everything had been cleaned up. The bed had been made. Everything. Same thing with the tunnel. Diana was, she was dead 10 minutes. They called special equipment in to reopen the tunnel and to scrape and sanitize the tunnel and scrub it down.
That fast?
Instead,
they should have shut it down as a crime scene.
Absolutely. Oh, my God, that's why they make crime scene tape. You get one chance to investigate a crime scene, just one. It's like butterfly wings. Once you touch it, that's it. It's over with.
Now, with her dead, with her out of the way, what did that do to those that were responsible?
Well, it allowed the cash cow to keep rolling. You know, it's a horrible thing to imagine, but there are countries in this world whose entire economy exists on the sale, legally or illegally, of arms.
You're right.
There are trillions of dollars. She was upsetting the finances of the globe with what she was doing. And there's no way that she could continue to have this done. So the royal family was involved in the cover-up, and they used intel that was part of the royal family, but the royal family had everything to lose and nothing to gain by trifling with Diana. You know, they're obsessed with three things: keeping a monarchy going.
Keeping the money flowing to them.
Right. You know, showing up and being ceremonial. And staying away from people.
Yeah.
The last thing they want is to take her out and have an uprising to threaten the monarchy. There's no way they would get involved in that. So they were horrified. They had that's why the queen took so long to respond. They didn't know what the hell to do.
And she was loved by people, wasn't she, Diana?
Yeah. One thing that she did that was really fantastic. She had a great way about her. What a terrific way she had about her. She would reach out to the people, and she would go shake hands and see babies. And the royals didn't do this. So I don't know if it was her intention to do this, but you know, she was making them look bad. Probably wasn't even her intention. She was just a compassionate, caring person. So when the royals would come out, when she was in the royal family, you know, she would go over and say hi to people, and I think it was just her nature.
What happened between her and Prince Charles? Was it just a breakup, or was he playing around or something, extramarital affairs?
There was a lot of royal crotch-swapping going on, I'll put it to you that way.
All right.
He was involved with a woman long before Princess Diana came in.
Is that the one he ended up marrying again, Camilla?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. She seems like a nice lady.
Yeah, she's a nice gal. The queen actually picked Diana.
The queen did? Really?
Yeah, she selected...
Well, she made a good pick.
Oh, yeah. She had to give her approval because the Spencers, one of the big misconceptions is that Diana was a commoner. She was not a commoner at all. I mean, her family traced back. She's royalty in both England and France. So, I mean, her father was the 8th Earl of Spencer.
Yeah, they were royalty, to be sure.
Absolutely. It just so happened that when she came into the media eye, she was doing menial jobs.
Well, stay with us, Steve. We're going to take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and talk about FDR and that incredible story, who murdered FDR. And then we'll take calls next hour with you, too, on the second half of the program.